ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kinda heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
Violence among children has soared across the U.S. since 2020.
There was broad agreement that the disruptions brought by the pandemic in schooling, in routines, and in services for at-risk youth led to a lot of problems for youth. There was increased stress on youth amid the sort of swelling mental health crisis.
We'll examine the myriad factors behind the surge and why Ford is cutting prices for its electric vehicles. Plus, why smart appliance makers are hoping you'll keep them connected. It's Monday, January 30th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. A faction of the Pakistani Taliban known as the TTP has claimed responsibility for a bombing that killed at least 59 people at a mosque within a police compound today. Authorities say most of those killed in the attack in the city of Peshawar in Pakistan's northwest were police. The main group that the TTP belongs to denied authorizing the attack. Our South Asia correspondent Saeed Shah says Pakistan's government will likely consider the Afghan Taliban's influence over its Pakistani counterpart.
This is particularly awkward for Pakistan, which has a relationship with the Afghan Taliban, but yet it is unable to convince Afghanistan's rulers that they should act against the Pakistani Taliban, which carries out all these attacks inside Pakistan. The sheer scale of the bombing of the mosque in the police compound in Peshawar has really meant that Pakistan will now have to turn up the heat on the Afghan Taliban over this issue. And it looks like the relations between Pakistan and the Afghan Taliban are going to come under very serious strain as a result of this attack.
Talks between the Pakistani Taliban and Pakistan's powerful military broke down late last year. In business news, Ford is revving up production and cutting prices for its electric Mustang Mach-E crossover. The automaker says it's using its new electric vehicle supply chain to streamline costs and lower prices. The move comes just weeks after the number one EV seller, Tesla, cut prices for some of its models by nearly 20%. The shift comes as competition in the EV market heats up, fueled by Wall Street money and government subsidies. A federal appeals court has rejected Johnson & Johnson's plan to use bankruptcy to resolve about 38,000 lawsuits alleging its talc-based baby powder products caused cancer. J&J has long maintained its talc products are safe, and it argued the bankruptcy strategy would be more efficient and fair to claimants. The company says it'll challenge the ruling. And Congress allotted the Environmental Protection Agency more than $100 billion to spend on climate-related projects as part of the 2021 infrastructure package and last year's Inflation Reduction Act. But community groups who have long fought for funding say they're having trouble navigating the new rules for getting the funds. Devin DeWolf chairs a nonprofit organization, Feed the Second Line, in New Orleans that installs solar panels on restaurants to help them stay in business during power outages. He's hoping the EPA will approve one of the group's projects ahead of hurricane season in May.
They passed all this stuff and they committed funding for all this stuff, but then they didn't actually like write it out as far as like, here's how it's going to work.
EPA officials say they're working overtime to draft spending guidelines and expect to release them soon. The agency also says it'll make sure the money is well spent. Coming up, juvenile crime has surged in the U.S. in recent years. We'll talk about why and what could be done about it after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The first 2 years of the coronavirus pandemic brought with them a wave of violent crime, particularly homicides and shootings, whose impact was felt both in cities and rural areas. Over the same period of time, violence among children soared, reversing a decades-long decline. U.S. homicides by juveniles acting alone rose 30% in 2020 from the prior year. It was more than double that for killings committed by multiple juveniles, according to federal data. Those daunting statistics have also meant more young victims. The data shows that in 2020, the number of juveniles killing other juveniles was the highest it's been in more than two decades. So what's fueling this surge in youth violence? And what are some possible solutions? Joining me now with more on this story is national reporter Zusha Ellenson. Hi, Zusha. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Anne-Marie.
So, Zusha, earlier on in the pandemic, we saw crime spike in cities across the country. Does what we're seeing now, this rise in juvenile crime, mirror those broader statistics? Can you parse that out for us a bit?
Yeah, well, let's back up a little. I mean, juvenile crime is such a fascinating thing to look at. It has been dropping for decades. Before the pandemic, juvenile crime was at absolute lows. And then once the pandemic started, we saw violence start to spike in cities and in rural areas across the country. Violence among youth, among teens, wasn't really spiking in those early days. But then, as school closures continued, as sort of there was a lot of disrupting in the routines of young people, then we started to see more violence among youth. In 2020 and 2021, we started to see rises in homicides and shootings involving youth. It was not just limited to big cities as well. We looked at Peoria, Illinois, population 112,000, and they had 8 juvenile homicide victims in 2021, and in 2020, there were none. So this is happening in even smaller cities as well.
One of the, quite frankly, most heartbreaking quotes in your story is from a parent who lost her daughter, Kihara Tay, who was 11 years old, to gun violence in New York City last year. Her mother said, quote, "It's just kids killing kids." What happened in this case?
Yeah, so this is an extremely tragic case of an 11-year-old dying from gun violence in New York City. And my excellent colleague Dan Frosch really dug into this case. He talked to police and prosecutors. We reviewed surveillance footage, and he spoke with the little girl's family at length. So what happened was, on one May afternoon of last year, there was a 13-year-old boy, and he was running through the Bronx streets, and he was being chased by two teens on a scooter. And this is according to police and prosecutors. We reviewed surveillance video, which shows him frantically trying to open the doors of an assisted living facility. And you can see that the doors won't open. And then the scooter peels onto the sidewalk and speeds toward him, you can see on the surveillance video. And what police and prosecutors tell us happened next is a 15-year-old boy riding on the back of that scooter pointed a handgun at the 13-year-old boy and fired multiple rounds. This is what police allege. So nearby, 11-year-old Kihara Tay was standing outside a beauty salon after school. She was eating some chicken wings, and she was waiting for her friends to finish getting their nails done. This is what family told us. And what happened was a stray bullet struck Kihara Tay in the stomach, according to police and prosecutors. She was rushed in critical condition to a hospital nearby, but tragically she died later that night. And that quote that you read at the top came from Kihara Tay's mother talking about this extremely tragic situation.
And this is just one of numerous examples throughout the story. You also spoke to experts across the country about what could be fueling this surge. What did they say?
It depended who you talked to. There was broad agreement that the disruptions brought by the pandemic, the disruption in schooling, in routines, disruption in services for at-risk youth led to a lot of problems for youth. There was increased stress on youth amid this sort of swelling mental health crisis. And then in talking to a lot of teens, during this time, a lot of teens just went deeper and deeper onto social media and got in conflicts with other teens, and those turned increasingly deadly. Another factor is that guns are becoming more widely available, right? You had record sales in guns, so kids were getting them from family members, they were buying them off social media, and then with the rise of so-called ghost guns, which are privately made firearms, guns you can make at home without a background check. And so just a whole storm of events came together to create this.
Zusha, perhaps what is one of the toughest questions here, what are some of the possible solutions? Did you find any places where the needle is starting to move in terms of hopefully reversing this trend? What policies could possibly make a difference here?
Yeah, that's a really interesting debate that's going on. So stepping back once again, you saw such a massive decline in juvenile crime over the past 3 or 4 decades that approach to treating juvenile crime has changed a lot because of that. Juvenile detention centers were not full, so authorities had time and space to have a more rehabilitative approach to juvenile justice. A lot of intervention programs, sentences were not as long, all these sort of things. And researchers say that it was working. I mean, all these reform programs came in as juvenile crime continued to decline and decline and decline. And there's research that shows that juvenile offenders can be reformed. But now, as juvenile crime rises a bit in the past couple of years, you have prosecutors and sheriffs and police chiefs calling for more discretion over what kind of sentences these juveniles are getting. You know, they want stiffer sentences. They want a little more law and order approach. In terms of what the answer is, some researchers say, well, you know, maybe just getting over the disruptions of the pandemic and violence will recede a little. We've already seen, in general, homicides dip in 2022 after rising in 2020 and 2021. But at that same time, juvenile shootings have continued to rise in some cities. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. The one thing I think we really need to address here is the trauma that is being inflicted upon these young people. You know, we talked to a 14-year-old from Philadelphia, and she's lost family members and then recently lost a fellow 14-year-old. Her friend was just walking in a street in their neighborhood and got caught in the crossfire and died. And this sort of stuff is really hard for kids to deal with. You know, she said after her friend died, her school held a 10-second moment of silence a few days later. And then it was just like nothing had changed. So yeah, there obviously needs to be some work done, some programs put in place to help deal with all the trauma that these teenagers are dealing with.
I've been speaking with Wall Street Journal national reporter Zusha Ellenson. Zusha, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie, for having me.
And finally, appliance makers are betting that smart stoves, microwaves, and dishwashers will help transform their businesses, creating opportunities to bring in new revenue. But first, they'll need to convince owners to keep their appliances connected in the first place. LG and Whirlpool say just about half of their smart appliances stay connected after installation. Our enterprise tech reporter, Isabel Bousquet, says the manufacturers are hoping to improve those figures.
You buy a washing machine, and then you don't need to go out and buy another washing machine the next year. That washing machine is good for 10 or 15 years. So they thought they could have an ongoing relationship with the customer, and they could get data on how the customer is using their products, and they could use that to sell that customer on replacement parts or subscription services. LG had one where they were tracking the amount of water that was passing through people's water filters and their smart refrigerators, and they were able to use that to sell people on water filters, and they saw some increased sales from that. So that's their play. They want this ongoing relationship with the customer, and they want these other lines of revenue.
Meanwhile, Whirlpool reported today a $1.6 billion net loss last quarter. The company says it plans to cut hundreds of millions of dollars in costs and expects demand for its products to pick up in the second half of the year. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.